Hi guys, welcome back to the Rare Disorder Podcast. As always, it's Shivani, and happy Saturday. I hope today was so fun for you guys. I just ran some errands and kind of took care of some work that I had pending, and I'm super excited because this week I received like many emails about the Rare Disease Week training, which is coming up. And I'm so excited for that because just everyone I've talked to has talked about how fun it is and just about their experiences there. So I'm so excited to be participating in that this year. And regarding the podcast, I have so many special guests coming on. And if you've reached out to me or I've reached out to you, you'll be getting a response back from me very shortly. I'm kind of catching up on those in the next couple of days. And I have so many recordings scheduled for this week. Like, I think I have 3 this week and then 3 next week. So really trying to get those podcasts out there for you guys. But I hope you guys are having a great day. And let's get right into the podcast. Welcome back to Rare Disease Fact of the Week. This week, our fact is, in the United States, a rare disease is defined as a condition that affects fewer than 200,000 people. This definition was created by Congress in the Orphan Drug Act of 1983. So essentially, this is like when the definition of rare disease became a thing, and rare diseases also became known as orphan diseases just because the drug companies were not as interested in adopting them to develop treatment. So this is why the act was called the Orphan Drug Act of 1983. Now, time for our guest. I'm so excited to welcome Dan, who is a fighter of colon cancer. I'm so excited to have you on the pod today, Dan. To start, I was wondering if you could give an introduction of yourself.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to be on your podcast. My name is Dan Drydock Shockley. I'm retired of the U.S. Navy, Operation Desert Storm, Operation Enduring, and Iraqi Freedom veteran. And I am a 10-year hereditary colon cancer warrior.
All right, so just to kind of start out, what rare diseases do you have, and how would you describe life with it in general?
I have a hereditary colon cancer syndrome known as attenuated FAP. And I was diagnosed with that back in 2012. And I underwent my first and only colonoscopy at 51 years old in 2012. We found 100 polyps embedded throughout my colon, rectum, and anus as a result of that colonoscopy. And it was in the best practice of medicine to undergo germline DNA testing, which confirmed that I have a mutation known as APC, which is adenomatous polyposis coli. Now, since I was 51, that confirmed the diagnosis of attenuated FAP. Individuals who have attenuated FAP, to be diagnosed, that range is anywhere between 50 and 55 for early detection, which is when I was diagnosed. So as a result of that, I underwent a total proctocolectomy surgery with a permanent ileostomy. Now, in layman terms, that means I had my colon, rectum, and anus removed, and I have a permanent ileostomy. With the confirmation of attenuated FAP diagnosis, any of those polyps left unattended have a 100% chance of developing into colon cancer. And I agreed to have the surgery 2 weeks after my diagnosis was confirmed. Now, it's important to note that one of those polyps ended up being an 8-centimeter tumor that was stage 0 colon cancer. And that was that particular polyp, the tumor, was in my ascending colon. And fortunately, my colorectal surgeon was able to get all the associated lymph nodes. So were you able to successfully overcome that that challenge? And I go about my life having a permanent ostomy and being an advocate for the importance of early detection. I go about my life as if nothing happened.
Yeah, that's great to hear that you kind of overcame that challenge after going through all these different procedures and things like that. So could you talk about like an average day in your life, how your colon cancer like can interfere with your average day, just like an average day in your life today?
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, I've adapted a mantra that I learned when I was in the military, and that's adapt, improvise, and overcome. And that's how I live my life. I go about my daily activities as if nothing happened. I don't have any symptoms. I don't have any side effects or treatment regimes for the mutation. I mean, we took care of the colon cancer part of it. Now, the mutation will and has manifested in my stomach and small intestine. And there's also a part of the hereditary colon cancer syndrome that will impact my eyes. However, there's no symptoms. And we just continue to do surveillance. In fact, yesterday, I just completed my annual retina examination. I also see another ophthalmologist for an examination on an annual basis, and also an optometry to check my vision. So there's three different appointments that I have in the ophthalmology world. Now, that particular portion of the mutation is called congenital hypertrophy retinal pigmentation of the epithelia. I know that's a mouthful. So the acronym is CHRPE, C-H-R-P-E. And CHRPE is directly related to the APC gene. So we have to, no pun intended, we have to keep an eye on it. And so I have 5 elliptical lesions in my left eye. I have 2 elliptical lesions in my right eye. And I went annually for the 3 ophthalmology examinations to check on the progress of the mutation. I also go through endoscopic procedures on an annual basis of my stomach and the beginning of my small intestine. Now, a year and a half ago, I had my endoscopic procedures performed, and the results, we found a 3-centimeter adenoma in the beginning of my small intestine. It was about between 10 and 20 centimeters into my small intestine, which is known as a jejunum, if I pronounced that correctly. I'm not a medical professional, so bear with me. So the recommendation was to consider surgery to remove up to 60 centimeters of the beginning of my small intestine, and also remove the gallbladder and redo the bile ducts to the pancreas. Now, this is an invasive surgery, a critical surgery, and there's a handful of medical centers in the U.S. that can perform that. And fortunately, I was in Palo Alto at the Veterans Medical Center in Palo Alto, and I was referred to Stanford University Hospital. So my surgeon, I agreed to have the surgery. My surgeon was one of the nation's leading pancreatic cancer surgeons, and he was able to successfully perform this procedure. Now, I didn't have pancreatic cancer. However, this particular mutation requires someone that has the expertise in pancreatic cancer surgeries. So that was April of last year, and I've made a full recovery. So once again, you know, no symptoms, no side effects. It was all the surveillance we were able to provide the proper medical attention and surgery to prevent the mutation from getting to the point where it would manifest into a pancreatic cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great to hear that it was kind of like an early detection, so you were able to get the surgery, and also just you not having any side effects or symptoms after is really great to hear, because I know that sometimes some problems that arise are like late detection or late diagnosis, and this can lead up to even more severe medical problems or situations later in life.
Absolutely. And I feel that my medical, my military career has afforded me the opportunity to be able to adapt, improvise, and overcome. As I mentioned earlier, we also, plan for the worst and hope for the best when it comes to maneuvers and different operations that have been involved within the military, and now involved with various operations on the medical side, to overcome this mutation from manifesting into full-blown cancer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so is there anything you feel that, like, other people or just, like, the general medical population should know about colon cancer? Like, are there any common misconceptions about it or some myths that you feel like people should know?
Well, pertaining to hereditary colon cancer, what I've personally experienced is, of course, early detection is vital. Have discussions with your family members. Have discussions with your medical team to determine the best course of action for screening, especially if you have family history and or you have symptoms, because we need to determine exactly what the cause is. And fortunately, the certified genetic counselors can do DNA testing to determine if there's an underlying issue, such as a gene mutation. And if there is, then that will affect the evaluation to what type of treatment would be required. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, in my case, I had my certified genetic counselor, my colorectal surgeon, we all discussed the treatment once the diagnosis came back, and that would be that total proctocolectomy with permanent ileostomy surgery. Now, we also have to keep in mind, I think of in life, we have two choices. We can react or we can respond. And I choose to respond. And by that, I mean, I gather information. So when it comes time to make a decision, I can make a logical decision based on the research that I have conducted, particularly in the case of having attenuated FAP. So I knew that once the mutation was confirmed, that it was in the best practice of medicine to have the surgery to remove my colon, rectum, and anus. So that said, I've embraced, my condition from the onset. My mindset is I tend not to think about things I'm unable to control, such as medical issues. What I can control is my positive attitude. And after 6 decades on God's green earth, my positive attitude has brought me this far. Why change now? So I've embraced, the mutation, the diagnosis, and life after not only the diagnosis, but life after having a permanent ostomy. So I try to relay that information in the different advocacy opportunities, whether it be via a guest on a podcast such as this, or an article, or articles that I have written or were written about me. And I try to relay the information about my journey. We're all in this journey of life together. So, retaining a positive attitude has been, vital in my being able to recover and, from the diagnosis, the surgeries, and to go about my life and enjoy, every moment.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully be a source of inspiration and encouragement for those who hear or read about my journey.
Yeah, I've seen like the numerous podcasts you've been on and like your features and things like Nord and also just these different blogs. And I just really admire your like positive attitude towards persevering and just keep on going. And through all these publications that you've been a part of, I feel like you're really making an impact and getting your journey out there for a source of inspiration for others. So I really applaud you for that.
Well, thank you very much. I send out positive thoughts and vibes and I get that back tenfold. And, my purpose in life is to educate the world about attenuated FAP, continuing the legacy of Dr. Henry T. Lynch on the importance of early detection in hopes of saving lives. Now, it's important to note that attenuated FAP was discovered by Dr. Henry T. Lynch. He is the founding father of hereditary cancer research. And it was an honor. I actually got to meet him 7 months after my surgery. He, at the time, was the director of preventive medicine at Creighton University in Omaha, Nebraska. And he came to Hawaii, where I was residing at the time, and I had the opportunity to be personally introduced to Dr. Lynch before one of his academic lectures. And then after his lecture, we sat down, had lunch. My genetic counselor and my colorectal surgeon are colleagues of Dr. Lynch through the years. And so my genetic counselor introduced me to Dr. Lynch. We sat down and had a discussion for an hour and 50 minutes. I got to talk to him about my diagnosis and successful surgery. And then he considered me a colleague. And through the years, I would send him my pathology reports for my endoscopic procedures. He would review them and give me his feedback and insight. And when he came to Hawaii, he was 86 and a half years old. And then June 2nd of 2019, at 91 and a half years old, he passed away. Now, he was researching up until a month before he passed away. And I want to hopefully continue his legacy by educating the world about the mutation, attenuated FAP. Mm-hmm. Like I said, and the importance of early detection in hopes of saving lives. And that's my purpose in life now. And not just nationally, I want to be internationally able to share my journey, educating the medical community, the certified genetic counselors, the GI community, whether they be students or practicing as fellows, interns, or residents, and reach across to the rare disease community. I've been an advocate for these communities for numerous years, and of course the ostomy community, and there's so many different opportunities, and I'm just thankful that I've had the opportunity to share my journey on these platforms. A year ago, I was invited by the University of Michigan Genetic Hereditary Testing Advisory Board to be a member to share my journey with them, and I'm also a live case presentation for the Genetics in GI Malignancy Conference with the University of Texas Health Center in San Antonio. Now, I've been a live case presentation for them 3 of the last 4 years. We do them virtually now, but the first time I did it was live, and there were 3 different GI doctors, 2 certified genetic counselors, in the classroom. We're in the middle of this classroom. There were 225 GI students in the third year of residency. And the plan was to have the genetic counselors do my pedigree live for the students, and they had to guess what I had. So it was amazing. And then we opened it up to questions with the students for 10 to 15 minutes. And we do that virtually now. So the first Friday of every December, I'll be part of their conference. And it's amazing because these students have not had opportunity to meet with patients because they're still in their residency. Mm-hmm. So what an honor that is to be able to share my journey with them at that level, because they're just starting their medical career. And any other opportunity that presents itself, I'm more than happy to collaborate with them to, you know, see what involvement I can have with their organization.
Yeah, so for the conference thing, is that like a yearly type thing?
Absolutely, yeah. The University of Texas, it's the first Friday of every December. The University of Michigan Genetic Hereditary Testing Advisory Board, we have meetings quarterly. They're video. It's all video. And this was even before everything, the way things are going in the last couple of years. So it makes it great, because if we can do these conferences virtually, that's amazing, because mm-hmm. we can have a larger audience that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so definitely.
I look forward to numerous more opportunities in the near future.
Yeah, that's great to hear. I feel like just really taking opportunities is really important as they present themselves to you, because you don't know who you can impact or who will be listening to that podcast or reading that blog. I really think that's a great thing you're doing.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I've had video calls with one of the GI doctors at the Stanford University who specializes in hereditary colon cancer research. Mm-hmm. I've had a video call with the director of genomics at Stanford University, as well as one of the leading GI researchers at MD Anderson in Houston. And it's interesting, the individuals you get to communicate with over the years. Dr. Henry T. Lynch, his son, Dr. Patrick Lynch, is a GI researcher at MD Anderson in Houston. And the call I had with one of their GI researchers down there, he actually knows Dr. Patrick Lynch. They're colleagues, obviously. And so we got to share some commonalities. Mm-hmm. And, it's just amazing to be able to, I mean, me not being a medical professional, being being diagnosed with a hereditary colon cancer syndrome, to sit on the other side of the table, to collaborate with the medical professionals. And it's my way of giving back. It's like that movie, Pay It Forward, that came out about 24 years ago. And this is my way of paying it forward. You know, it brings quite great joy to me to be able to collaborate on so many different levels, mm-hmm. Globally about my journey.
Yeah. All right. So just kind of switching gears now, how would you say that you are coping with just these different diagnoses in day-to-day life, like through support systems, support groups, or just anything like that?
Oh, great questions. So what I look at is my outlook in life is being positive. There are opportunities that I get to attend virtually some support groups. Mm-hmm. I'm there. I feel my presence is more to be a source of inspiration and encouragement for those who are attending whatever diagnosis they have had in the rare disease community and or the hereditary colon cancer area. So I like to project positivity and how my military experience throughout my 22 years on active duty have afforded me the opportunity to overcome personal and professional adversity. So once again, you know, sending out positive thoughts and vibes, I get that back tenfold. And I just want to, hope that I can share some experiences that I've learned through the decades that will help individuals and family members of those who have been diagnosed to continue to press on. I learned a long time ago that we may not be able to change the direction of the wind. What we can do is adjust our sails. And after 22 years on active duty in the Navy, I'm good at adjusting my sails.
Mm-hmm. So what are some initiatives that you take to raise awareness? This could be like any advocacy work you do. I know you mentioned like the podcast and the blogs, or like spreading awareness on social media. It's just like any awareness tactics or initiatives you take part in.
Absolutely. Great question. I'm involved with numerous organizations with ostomy, colon cancer, and rare disease in those various communities. On so many different levels. My initiative I created on behalf of a colleague that we collaborated on this starting 6 years ago. What we're looking to do is to have a hereditary colon cancer syndrome awareness week, and we're looking to get the fourth week of March. Mm-hmm. Designated as HCC Awareness Week. Now, we have to get legislative jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. So through the years, I've been able to receive sponsorship from Senator Donna Campbell. She's a medical doctor, and she is in Texas in the San Antonio area. And I actually resided in her district several years ago, and I asked her chief of staff if they would be interested in sponsoring my initiative. So I sent them the draft resolution and requested her her insight and feedback. She accepted to sponsor it and put it on her agenda for the 87th Texas Legislature, which convened a year ago this month. So March 23rd of last year, she presented her resolution, her Hereditary Colon Cancer Awareness Week resolution, at my request, to the Senate floor. I got to watch it live on the live stream from the courthouse, virtually, to be part of it. And it's amazing. Now, what I want to do ultimately, the goal is to have a congressional resolution to permanently designate the fourth week of March as HCC Awareness Week, and that would be nationally. So what I need to do is we need to have the two senators in Texas, Senator Ted Cruz and John Cornyn, request them to sponsor this, take it to D.C., and have the 49 states co-sponsor it. And I'm also be requesting the U.S. territories of Guam, American Samoa, and Puerto Rico to be involved with this, so permanently we can get the fourth week of March designated as HCC Awareness Week on a national level. Now, this is a daunting task. It's going to take years to accomplish. However, I'm battle-tested. I'm ready to lead the charge.
Yeah, that's amazing that you're kind of taking charge to create this week. And yeah, I know like it takes a couple of years to get it passed through everything and kind of make it an official national week. But I'll be looking forward to that in the near future.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Yeah, I just keep plugging away, and the more opportunities I have to be an advocate, I mentioned that initiative. So it's getting a lot of traction. We still have a long way to go, but the thing is, it's all about going back to my advocacy opportunities early on with my diagnosis and living with a hereditary colon cancer syndrome with a permanent ostomy. It's all about positive attitude, perseverance, and just keep forging ahead. You know, my acronym, my signature on my email is always forge ahead with a purpose. And that's a positive spin on a bleak diagnosis, because always forge ahead with a purpose is actually the acronym for AFAP. And I came up with that just in the middle of the night, about a year after my surgery. I just woke up, and in the middle of the night, and the first two words on my mind were forge ahead. And I said, well, forge ahead's good. What am I doing? I'm forging ahead with a purpose. And I said, well, that's FAP, but I have attenuated FAP. And I said to myself, well, what am I always doing? Oh, I'm always forging ahead with a purpose. So that's what I'm doing. And that's what my life is, consists of, is continuing the advocacy opportunities. And, like I said, hope to have a positive impact on the medical community as well as the masses.
Yeah, so I'm really interested in kind of like what was the first step you took to kind of get your story out there? Like, was it a podcast or just starting making a blog post or something? Like, if you remember, what was the first kind of step you took?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I remember that like it just happened yesterday. I had reached out to the public affairs office at Triple Army Medical Center, where I was a patient. Mm-hmm. And I let them know about my diagnosis, which it was confirmed that my surgery was performed there at Triple Army Medical Center. So I thought, me being a retired Navy, I thought it'd be kind of neat to have the Army Public Affairs Office, if they'd be interested in doing a feature story on my journey as it began. So I was interviewed 7 weeks after my surgery. I was interviewed for the article, and the public affairs staff invited my colorectal surgeon, who was a lieutenant colonel in the Army at the time, to be present. And we had a photo shoot, and she did the article, and it was released, and it's on the U.S. Army website, and it will be there indefinitely. In fact, I have fun. I check it probably 2-3 times a month. I check to see if it's still there. And it was released in late October of 2012. And I just checked it last night just for fun, and it's still there. So that was the first article that was written about my journey. Then a few months later, I was contacted by one of the staff writers for the Wound and Ostomy Continence Nurse Society. And the Wound and Ostomy Nurses are the ones that help us ostomates go about our life, with an ostomy. So they have a society that consists of approximately 5,000 wound and ostomy nurses nationally. And the writer was intrigued about my journey. They had read about it with the Army article that came out. So they wanted to interview me. And they have a magazine that they publish every quarter. And they wanted to feature me in their spring edition. So they interviewed me in January of 2013. Mm-hmm. And the article was released in their spring edition, which was the first week of May. So that was an absolute honor. And those were the first two. And then the United Ostomy Associations of America, they have support through what's called the Phoenix Magazine. And that's a magazine that pertains to ostomates nationally. And the editor from that magazine contacted me after he had read the Wound and Ostomy Nurse article. And he wanted to interview me for an article. After that interview was done, he said, Dan, you know so much about your condition. I would like you to write the article. At first, I was going to write it based on the interview, but you know so much about it. I thought it'd be better that you write it. I'll send you some questions. You answer them, and we'll go from there. And that article was released in the Phoenix Magazine in September of 2013. So within a year of my diagnosis and surgery, there were three articles, two of them being in magazines and one, of course, being on the Army website. And then it just went from there because I had the opportunity to collaborate with other organizations. And I wasn't even involved with the rare disease community up until this point. So a year after my surgery, a year and a half after my surgery, I was finally introduced to the National Organization for Rare Disorders, knowing that they have a Rare Disease Day that they sponsor the last day of February of every year. And I thought that was amazing. So I was reaching out to my mayor of Honolulu and the governor of Hawaii to request sponsorship of proclamations for Ostomy Awareness Day, which is the first Saturday of every October, Rare Disease Day, which of course, is, like I mentioned, is the last day of February. And then March is Colon Cancer Awareness Month. So I was asking for sponsorship of proclamations on behalf of the Colon Cancer Alliance, the United Ostomy Associations of America, and then NORD's Rare Disease Day campaigns, respectively. And then it just continued to blossom from there. It took off all my advocacy opportunities, because then, as a result of these advocacy opportunities, I was invited to be on guest on various podcasts, not just nationally, but internationally. So I've been a guest on a podcast for A Bigger Life. It's an ostomy-based group in Ireland. And then there were two different opportunities with organizations in Canada, the Ostomy Canada Society, and then different organizations. Like I said, there's a rare DIG, which is Rare Disease Interest Group out of Montreal, the McGill University. I've been collaborating with them for many years, as well as the Colon Cancer Coalition, the Colon Cancer Prevention Project, the Colon Cancer Alliance, and recently the Global Colon Cancer Alliance, as well as the UK-based Rare Revolution and Find a Cure organizations. That's just to name a few of my advocacy opportunities. And you know, I have the opportunity to either interview for an article or be a guest on a podcast, or I would submit an article for them to review and consider.
Yeah, it seems like you're really involved in just really contributing towards spreading awareness. Like through all these groups you've just mentioned, I know they're all very large groups with the rare disease base and like the ostomy space. So I feel like your name's really getting out there. Like I was looking at your different publications and everything like that, and I was really impressed. So that's like amazing.
Oh, thank you very much. And I also need to mention another organization, the Raymond Foundation. And last year I was invited by the Raymond Foundation to be virtually paired with a PGA champion for the Coligard Classic, which is a golf tournament that commences the last week of February in Tucson. And we do this, on my behalf, it's all virtual. So what they did is they paired me last year with a PGA champion from Sacramento, because I'm in the Sacramento area. And Kevin Sutherland was the PGA champion I was paired with, and he won the tournament. So he sent me the ball cap he wore during the tournament with a ribbon on it, you know, Colon Cancer Survivor Dan Shockley. And he sent me his ball cap, the autograph, and then he had a Stand Up For Cancer sign that he had made with my name on it. And they took a photograph of Kevin signing this Stand Up For Cancer banner at sunrise in Tucson. He sent me an 8x10 photograph of that. So I have framed that, and it's, and plus I had, I put it in a display case. And then the Raymond Foundation had reached out to me last month, asked me if I'd like to be virtually paired this year in the Color Guard Classic. So I'm waiting to find out which golfer I'll be paired with. But there's so many different things. There's so many different opportunities. And, you know, when you share your story with one organization, it gets disseminated to other individuals and other organizations. And before you know it, you just, you know, your advocacy opportunities just blossom. You know, it's, I think of that old phrase growing up about a farmer scattering good seeds in the field, and you wait to see what comes to fruition. And, you know, for the last going on 10 years, it's just, it continues to, you know, these opportunities continue to come to fruition.
Yeah, so I'm actually interested in how you found about my podcast. Was it through like another advocacy opportunity you were talking about, or something like that?
Yeah, it was, you know, it was, it came up on my Instagram and something I may be interested in. And when that shows up, I look at it and I say, you know, let's go for it. Let's see. You know, it's all about scattering seeds, you know, and mm-hmm. you just wait to see what comes to fruition. So that's usually how it's been happening with a lot of my advocacy opportunities. There's so many different opportunities out there, you know, that in that case, it's very fortunate that social media has helped me out to get the story out there on so many levels. So I hope that helps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting, because I've heard that a lot of people have either found it from like a different advocacy opportunity, as you were talking about, or like social media. But yeah. All right, so just as we kind of close out now, I was wondering if you have like any resources that you would like to share that you may have come across in your advocacy journey to help other people who are fighting the same diagnosis or just rare diseases or cancers in general.
Well, there's the resources I've been provided started out with my genetic counselor, of course, introducing me to Dr. Lynch, and I was able to obtain his peer-reviewed publications pertaining to attenuated FAP. You know, the important thing that helped me was communicating directly with medical professionals who had access to resources that would provide valuable information to me pertaining to the mutation. And, you know, from there, there's a lot of advocacy, there's a lot of organizations that I've been an advocate for that I've picked up on things through the years. I'm also part of Hereditary Colon Cancer Registries with Vanderbilt University Medical Center, Johns Hopkins University, the Creighton University, and there's the University of Michigan, of course, and then I'm also now involved with the Stanford University. So I like to focus on those opportunities to get precise information. You know, peer-reviewed publications are very important, and I look at the doctors that are listed that co-authored these peer-reviewed publications, and I communicate with some of them as well. So, in other words, it's, you know, I like to stick to the facts. I mean, I don't believe What I do believe in is reading the peer-reviewed publications that are specific to the diagnosis of the individual. So that way, once again, it goes back to that comment I made about we have two choices in life, react or respond. And by my responding to my diagnosis, I gather the information and I see what, information, not just nationally, but, internationally. So I can assess what the best course of action would be for the mutation, because it's a permanent mutation. So your life may change, and hopefully for the more positive side, by maintaining surveillance and early detection. That way you can detect things early enough to have the correct medical treatment regime, whether it be surgery or any of the routine surveillance. So that's what's helped me out. I hope that answers the question.
Yeah. So is there like anything else that you would like to share today that I may not have touched on, or just like a motivational quote you live by, or just any words of wisdom that you would like to share?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a couple of things I'd like to share. There's a couple acronyms that I've created over the months that I was recovering from my initial surgery 10 years ago. And that the first word is the word faith. And, because what is faith? Faith is believing in something we're unable to see. Faith is basically having hope, So I took the word faith and I broke it down into full assurance influenced through hope. So that's F-A-I-T-H. And what I mean by that, an example of faith is when you look out the window, you can see the tree branches swaying in the breeze. You see the effect of the breeze. We're unable to see the breeze. So that's kind of an example in general sense that I use about the word faith, because it's having hope in something we're unable to see. The next word I took was the word adapt, because I had to think about how it's going to be living with a permanent ostomy. And so I took the word adapt and I made the acronym attitude determines the ability for a positive transformation. And that's the word adapt, because of my attitude had determined the ability for a positive transformation. My transformation is I have a permanent ostomy now, and I also have it goes along with the hereditary colon cancer syndrome. So the word faith and adapt, I've created those acronyms, and that is that's a daily reminder for me, but it's also fun to share those with other individuals. Then I have a couple analogies. The first analogy is, what does life and the game of baseball both have in common? And the answer is neither have a time limit. There's no time limit in life and there's no time limit in baseball. So my thought was, if a baseball game goes into extra innings, I think of that as free baseball, because you're watching a game that normally would go 9 innings and it goes into extra innings, that's free baseball. So my point is, I look at my life as a 10-year hereditary colon cancer warrior. My life is in extra innings, so I'm enjoying free baseball. And my last thing I'll share was, I've heard this cliche, you can lead a horse to water, however, you can't make it drink. Well, a couple decades ago, I heard that there's a flip side to that cliche. There's a way that you can influence the horse to drink by feeding it salt on the way. So if you look out in the pastures and the farms and ranches, they have what's called salt blocks or salt licks, and that's where the livestock would go and lick it. So when they get to the watering hole, they're thirsty. Well, my point is, my hopes are that my story will serve as a source of salt to those who hear or read about it. So when it comes time to talk to their family, talk to their medical professionals about getting screened, that they'll be thirsty to make the decision to schedule their screening.
Got it. Thank you so much. And just to kind of close out now, I'd like to thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today, Dan. It was really a pleasure speaking with you and learning about your journey, different experiences you've had, and just some advice you have for rare disease patients and people who are fighting these different illnesses. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Absolutely. Thank you. I'm honored once again for the opportunity, and stay tuned for my updates. They'll be coming in the weeks and months to come.
All right, time for the Q&A session. So I'm going to be answering three questions this week. Each week I'll pick three questions and answer them. So today's first question is, how can I be on your podcast? So if you want to be on my podcast, I am very open to having almost everyone on. Just shoot me an email. My email is therarediseorderpodcast@gmail.com. And we can schedule a time to meet. And then regarding our recording session, it'll probably be a 1 to 2 month turnaround just because I have a lot of interest right now. So yeah, the first step would be to shoot me an email. And I'll be putting my email in the show notes as well. My second question I got this week is, what grade are you in? So I'm a senior, so that means I'm graduating high school this year. And actually just in less than 4 months, so I graduate in May. And I'm really excited for everything before the end of the year, like senior events and everything like that. And then the third question I got is, where did you go for December break? Or like, what did you do on break? So I went to the beach, a beach down in Florida, Seaside. It's a really nice area. It's really pretty. My family goes there a lot. So yeah, it was so much fun and a great start to the new year. All right, so that's all for my Q&A session. Hi guys. So as always, thank you guys so much for listening today. If you guys want to give a donation to my podcast, you can go straight to Anchor and there's a button right there. And then if you guys would leave a rating, that would be amazing. You can go to my link tree and there is a link there to leave a rating. But besides that, I'll see you guys next week.